want to begin by taking this opportunity, as always, to thank our sponsors, Jay and Noah Zwiebel and Saul and Rebecca Lubetsky. This is our 10th year together. I don't know if Jay realized to keep track, but this is not just something that Jay is a sponsor of, but this was Jay's initiative. We spent Pesach together over 10 years ago, and the plan was hatched. And it's very fascinating because I remember, Jay, you told me that you were familiar with such programs on Tisha B'Av from America. They don't really seem to exist in Eretz Yisrael. So the truth is, I think we've had partial success over the last 10 years. Ultimate success we have failed at because we're still mourning on Tisha B'Av. And yet, as far as I could tell this year, there's even more and more programs that are taking place in Yerushalayim and throughout Israel. And I'd like to think that that's at least a partial success, that more and more people are seeing the value of these kind of explanatory and in-depth programs for the keynotes. So yishar koach to the sponsors, yishar koach to all those who are working on the technical side, and yishar koach to all of you for being here. I know many of you are here from parts of Yerushalayim, and that's appreciated, but there are people who are here from all sorts of other places in Israel, including quite a few people, even from parts of Beit Shemesh and Ramat Beit Shemesh, even from my actual shul. So I thank them for being here, and I thank my shul for letting me be here. I thank them for tuning in. They're saying some of the keynotes by themselves, but they have a screen up in the shul so they can be following. And we hope that Hashem should give all of us the strength not only to have an easy and meaningful fast, but to have a meaningful kinos recitation where we not only hopefully get into the kinos, but more importantly, allow the kinos to get into us. Not long ago, I heard a touching story about a 9-year-old girl who walked into a local jewelry store. She looked around for a while at the various pieces that were on display, until her eyes settled on a particularly beautiful bracelet. It glistened just right. It had exactly the right shape and proportions that she was looking for. It caught her eye, and she motioned to the person behind the counter, who was actually the owner of the store, that she'd like to see this piece of jewelry. There weren't many other customers in the store at the time, so he figured he'll flatter this little girl. He takes out and he shows her the bracelet. And after a brief moment of looking at it and feeling it in her own hands, she says, "I want to buy it." The owner is not exactly sure how to handle this diplomatically, so he just, you know, hems and haws for a moment until he says, "You know, young girl, this is very, very expensive. I'm not sure if this is the right thing that you're looking for." So she confidently responds, "Don't worry, I have money." So he's, you know, his first attempt at pushing her off didn't work. So he tries to go a different route. And he says, "Well, why do you want this anyway? Who is this for?" He says, "Well, it's actually, I'm buying it as a present for my older sister." So now his curiosity was further piqued. And he said, "Why do you want to buy this for your sister? I thought you wanted it for yourself, but for your sister? What's the point? Why?" So he explained, he said, "Well, we have no parents. And my sister takes care of us, and she works so hard, and she does such a good job. I felt like she deserved something special. I want to buy her this bracelet." And the owner is, you know, even more touched, but he doesn't know what to say. And in the meantime, she takes out her wallet, and she empties the whole thing on the counter. And all the coins come tumbling out. And slowly but surely, they look at it and they count it. And the owner at this point is a loss for words. He thinks a little bit more. And then he says, "You know, you have just exactly the right amount." Wraps it up and he gives her the jewelry. A few hours later, a teenage girl comes into the store, marches right up to the front counter, takes out the bracelet, puts it on the counter, demands to see the owner. He says, I don't know why you would have even indulged this. My sister claims she bought it. If that's true, I don't know why you would have done that. And number two is, it's sure it's not true because she doesn't have any money. So I think my sister stole this. But I'm begging you, please, if she did steal it, have a little rachmanis. We're returning it. No harm, no foul. Please take it back. I'm embarrassed. I'm sorry. I don't know how this happened, but it shouldn't have happened, and I'm sorry. I'm giving this back. So the owner says, actually, she didn't steal it, and she bought it, and I was happy to give it to her. She says, what are you talking about? How could you give it to her? How could you say she bought it? She doesn't have enough money. She says, you have to understand, people come into a jewelry store all the time to buy gifts for people that they love. They are buying for their spouse. They're buying for their children. They're buying for various loved ones. And it's all based on love. And yet, all the years that I was doing this, I never felt a love so all-powerful and so authentic as your sister a few hours ago. And again, the teenager is really touched to hear such a beautiful sentiment, but she says, that's fine. But we're not schnorrers. And I'm glad she didn't steal it, but I'm not looking for a gift, and there's no way she could have afforded it. We're proud people. We do what we can. We don't have much, but we can make it on our own. Thank you, but no thank you. And the owner finally says, listen, you have to understand, your sister paid for it, and she paid for it in full. She paid 10 shekel, 30 agurot, and a broken heart. She paid in full. When I heard this story, it struck me right away as an ideal mashal for what we're trying to do today. And we have so many things that we owe HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And hopefully throughout the 3 weeks, and especially today, we're trying to galvanize ourselves each in our own way. Only we know our own imperfections. And we're trying to be better. We're trying to pay back HaKadosh Baruch Hu the debt, not only for all the things we've done wrong, but for all the things He's done well for us. We have a huge debt. And we do our best. We do tshuva. Hopefully we have His orus today, other times during the year. And yet, if we're being honest, I think most of us would agree, even with the tshuva, we're probably all still a little lacking. And yet, I think the message of this story is deep and resonant. And that is that if we pay back what we owe to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even if it's insufficient, but we pay it back with a broken heart, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is more likely to accept that as payment in full. If you take a look at the second source on your sheet, the Medrash in Vayikra Rabba in Parshas Tzav, talking about the Karbonos, says something remarkable. Amar of Abba Bar Yudin, Kol Masha Posel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Huba Behema, Hichshir Ba'adam. We know there are many, many rules for what could disqualify an animal being brought as a sacrifice. Says the Medrash, going category by category, even those things which on an animal disqualify the sacrifice, if something similar is part of a human being, when he brings him or her or she brings herself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgives that. What would disqualify for an animal as a karbon is actually permitted to a human being when they offer themselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And as the Medrash continues, and on the second line, says the Medrash, even though various things which show the animal to be broken disqualify the animal, Hichshir Ba'adam Lev Nishbar. But a Jew who comes with a broken heart to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's not a psul, that's kosher. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Medrash continues, Kli Tashmisho Shivurim. Hashem's preferred Kli, when it comes to human beings, is a broken heart. With various psukim, well-known, powerful psukim, to underscore this point. Harofe L'Shivurei Lev, for example. The Kotzker had a very famous line, which probably Baal Peh, was reported for centuries in many languages. There's a considered the authentic Kotz Sefer that you can get nowadays, MS Mikotz Titzmach, which has all the various famous sayings of Menachem Mendel Mikotzk, who was one of the great sayer of sayings in all Jewish history. And one of his famous ones includes the phrase, as they translated it from the Yiddish into the Hebrew, Ein lecha shalem yoter mi lev nishbar. There's nothing more whole than a broken heart. That's the idea of this medrash. I think that's the beautiful idea of the story we began with. And before we start our first kina, I want to share with you just one more source, which I only learned of just this past week, but it took my breath away, and really one of the more powerful perushim I've seen in a long time, and it fits perfectly with this theme. Take a look at source number one. The Sefer Torah MS, my guess is not familiar to most of you. It's a Chassidish Sefer written by Reb Leibele Eger. That should make some of your eyebrows go up. It's not usually the way the whole thing, everything in that sentence was incongruent. The Eger, this is a grandson of Rabbi Kiva Eger, the son of Rabbi Shlaima Eger, the Gilyan Marsha. These were not Chassidim. This was when it was meant something to be a misnagid, not like in our day and age. We're all a little Chassidish now. But there's no misnagdim anymore. There's no more fighting, really. I mean, we fight about other things, just not about that. But when that was a thing, the Egers were misnagdim. And it was not a pasha thing. This is not a history class now. We're not going to get into the details. It was a big thing in Europe at the time, in that part of the world, when the grandson of Rabbi Kiva Eger left the fold, Nebuch, to become Chassidish. And his Sefer Toras Emes, so in Parshas Toldos, he's discussing the story of Yaakov and Yitzhak in the Brachas. How at the behest of his mother, he dresses up, he puts the hair on his skin, and he basically lies. He tricks his father, he should think he's Esav, that he should be able to get the Brachos. Look what Rabbi Leibele Eger says. He's commenting, even though it's a very Chassidish, certainly not pshat approach, but he starts off with, I think like most really good Chassidic Torah, he actually starts with a very sensitive and close reading of the text. He starts with a very reasonable pshat question, which is why does the posuk seem to oscillate between Reach Begadav and Reach Bini? Yitzhak says, I smell the scent of the clothing, the animal smell, and I smell the scent of my son. What's the double language? So says Reb Leibele Eger, end of the first line. This is coming to teach us that at the time that Yaakov came la'aviv, v'shina es begadav, he put on Esav's clothing, that Yitzhak wouldn't recognize him. Haya libo nishbar bekirbo, al asoto devar kazeh l'shanot et begadav b'fnei aviv hakadosh, shlo yakiruhu. V'haya hadavar etzlo kibegida. Our whole childhood, hopefully our whole adulthood, we know this story. Do you ever think about what was going through Yaakov's mind when he was doing this? Was he nervous? Was he tense? Did he feel excited and exhilarated he was going to get the brachos? You can imagine multiple of emotions. The one they never taught me in school, I can promise you that, was that Yaakov was tormented. And Yaakov felt tremendous guilt, says Reb Leibele Eger, that he's betraying, begida, he's betraying his father. Kasher ba'al aviv b'lev nishbar hazeh, he was brokenhearted. But says Reb Leibele Eger, out of the Yaakov's brokenheartedness, ala reach shviras libo. His broken heart let out a sort of scent. And that's the first half of the pasuk, reach begadav. The very act of tricking his father was so painful to Yaakov, it broke his heart and let out a scent, so to speak, that came from his clothing. Points out there's an incredible medrash that says Bigadav, his clothing, is Bogdav, those who betrayed. And therefore he points out powerfully, I'm not sure you have to read the medrash this way, but says Leibele Eger, She Yaakov, Avinu of Alav Shalom, Kibogade Be'enei Atzmo. He was his own harshest judge. He viewed himself as a Bogade. V'zeh Shereach Yitzchak Avinu Alav Shalom, Reach Shviras Libo. The scent that Yosef, the Yitzchak smelled, as it were, that he noticed, was Yaakov's broken heart. And he gives a powerful metaphor. Kamo atzei besamim. If you have a very intensely, like a besamim or a cinnamon or something like that, right? If you break it, if you break the branch, you break the leaf, what does it let out? A more powerful smell. When Yaakov's heart was broken, his natural inner scent, as it were, was even more magnified, was even stronger. Ki aidei shiras leiv Yaakov me'abegidash asa lefi dato hiriach Yitzchak et etzem kedushat Yaakov. The reach, as it were, is the kedusha. Initially, Yitzchak senses the reach of the begadav, that sense of begida, of betrayal, which Yaakov carried with a broken heart. But as the pasuk testifies at the end, it was only because he smelled this pure, strong scent of the broken heart of Yaakov that the pasuk testifies, reach beni. He was really being aware of and smelling the scent of his son, because the true essence of Yaakov Davka came out at that moment. Because at that moment he had a broken heart. When you break something, its guts, its kitschkes, the essence falls out. A broken heart lets us know who you really are. And that moment gave testimony to who Yaakov really is. None of this comes easy for us on a day like today, at least for most of us. This is something that we'll speak about throughout the morning. It's difficult for us. We feel removed, alienated from the Beis HaMikdash. How can we be expected to have a broken heart about, of all things, the Churban HaBayis? And the answer is, it's incredibly difficult. And that's exactly why we're all here. We're not at a quickie kinos program. We're not just davening it up, one of the worst expressions ever invented, but I'm guilty of repeating. You understand that what that saying implies about our own davening. Davening up is a pejorative. If we daven slowly with kavana, that would be the greatest compliment you could give to something. But unfortunately, when we say davening something up, we usually mean it negatively. And we're not looking to daven up the kinos. We're looking to go slowly. The premise of this program is tov ma'at be'kavana, meharbe shalo be'kavana. And hopefully with the koach that we give each other, being together, some of the thoughts that we can share, hopefully we'll all break our hearts just a little bit to let out, hopefully, that true inner scent that we know we all have to want to feel connected to the Beis HaMikdash. And hopefully we can all accomplish that at least a little bit together this morning.